Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome back to the show the author of Brand Against the Machine, John Morgan. John was on the program in August of last year, and we had a great chat. We talked about a variety of subjects, most notably marketing and branding. We covered a lot of stuff, so be sure to go back and listen to that one. John, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
Are you kidding? You're a joy to talk with. I learned so much from you. And I have to tell you, your book, I mean, it's the, and I tell everybody who will listen, this is one of the few books that stays on my desk. You know, I've got a great bookcase system going on. I've got bookcases all over the house. I have them in the garage. Yours stays on my desk. Not many do. But
well, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. But here's the thing. I have to tell you, I have written and rewritten a review for Amazon about half a dozen times. And I want you to know I'm so intimidated by some of them that are in there, I keep rewriting mine.
Well,
yeah, no problem with Mitch and you know, all those guys. I'm like, oh, geez, really? I'll get it up there, I promise.
Well, thank you very much. There is a lot of great reviews there, which is always awesome.
Yeah.
And it's very fun for an author to read, you know, not just someone's opinion on the book, but also what they learn from it.
Right.
That's always a very, very neat experience.
Well, it's a great book, I have to say. And, you know, I've given it away as Christmas gifts. I mean, it's really a great, great book. What do you want to talk about today? This is your show. Whatever you want to cover today, I'm open for it.
My goodness. I am up for anything as well. I could talk about whatever. Whatever is on your mind, whatever is on anybody else's mind. I am an open book when it comes to your business, success, answering questions, all this kind of stuff. This is what I enjoy doing.
Great. Well, you know what I really would like to kind of tackle today? This to me is a time with all of the economic woes that are facing our country, the world. To me, this is a great time to become an entrepreneur if you haven't already started. And, you know, you may have to become an entrepreneur because you got kicked into it, or because it's always been a dream, whatever the circumstances are, to me, there are such huge, huge opportunities right now. And I think a lot of people don't quite see it that way. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're exactly right. When economic times and things like that sort of get tough, when industries start to struggle, that is certainly when opportunity gets created. And most of the world's most well-known and most successful entrepreneurs out there actually started their business in very rough economic times. And
mm-hmm.
So there's obviously a consistent track record there that dates back, you know, even over 100 years ago. So it is a good time. I feel like any time is actually a good time. But what has to happen is the person has to get right. And so what I mean by that is it's not just that the business opportunity is good or, you know, they've got a great business model and all these things. All of that, of course, is important. But if your mindset isn't right, then none of that even matters. And so that's the thing, is you've got to overcome that fear. A lot of people are in situations, like you mentioned, where they're kind of forced into it. You know, they've been laid off from their work, their industry,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, employers have cut back and, you know, all of that. Well, now if they're forced into it, you know, what's their attitude? What's their mindset when they wake up? Is it fear-based? Is it, you know, doubting that this is going to work and all of these things? Or are they jumping right into it? I'll tell you a story of somebody who did this remarkably well, and his name is Jason Elkins. And Jason worked for a company, you know, basically the company was doing, you know, website designs and, you know, things like that, like a lot of companies out there do. And Jason was selling these. You know, he was doing the proposals and networking and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And he did it very well for this company. But the company, like a lot of people, were facing some difficult decisions, had to let some people go. Jason was one of those people. And I noticed something when he made the Facebook update, you know, sort of, you know, announcing it. You could tell he was very much still in shock. And everyone starts jumping in on this post that he put on Facebook, commenting and saying, you know, we are so sorry to hear that. You know, we'll be thinking about you. We'll be praying for you. You know, hope you bounce back. Hope you get back up on your feet. And I saw this, and I thought, all they're doing is planting more fear in this guy's mind.
No kidding.
So I jump on there, and I say, congratulations. Now nothing's holding you back. You know,
you
got rid of the job. You know, and that stood out to him. Now, what's happened, and I believe it's been 2 years now since this occurred, Jason has not only still been on his own and run his own business. I actually had a conversation with Jason this morning. He is making more money than ever. More importantly, he has a great lifestyle. You know, he's home with the kids. He's there with his wife. He's able to, you know, spend time. He's not, you know, making the, you know, the morning commute, you know, and then the evening commute. He's not dealing with those type of pressures. And what's happening is he jumped right into it with confidence, with a determination that this was going to work. His business does not look the same today as it did when he first started after he had gotten laid off at the company, but his mindset's never changed. You know, the mindset of this is going to work, I'm going to figure this out, that has never changed. So he's actually never lost momentum. And now, Jason's not a superhero, but by any means. It's just that he approached it with a good positive mental attitude that a lot of people don't when they are forced into these kind of, you know, situations to where they have a decision to make. Am I going to commit to this or not?
Right. And, you know, John, I see this in my own industry. I get resumes practically every day from people looking at the virtual assistance industry or thinking that, you know, maybe they can jump into WordPress, which is great. I love that they're wanting to do it, but they're many times, 99% of the time, they're applying to me for a job. They're looking to replace their income with a job, not understanding that it is an entrepreneur career path, something entirely different. And it's very striking to me that they don't understand that, you know, becoming your own boss doesn't replace a paycheck. You know, you don't get that regular, you know, twice a month paycheck.
That's right.
Not hardly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think some people thrive on, you know, consistency, and that's fine. I don't knock anyone out there who, you know, wants to work with someone else and do a great job. That is wonderful. That's not me. My worst nightmare is waking up and I'm working for someone. You know, I don't care who it is. Right? I couldn't stand it. I have actually never worked for anyone in my life but myself. So I'm a rarity in that I never got a real job. this is just what I've been doing you know, from the start, which is maybe a whole other story. We can talk about that if you want to or not.
You have
but
to come back again.
You know, but it's one of those things where you know, we become entrepreneurs or we start our own business because we have an idea. And we're excited about this idea because we want the freedom. And that's where people quit. Because they get 3 months into it and they realize, oh, crap, I've got less freedom now because I'm the one doing everything and I have to work 24/7 to make this entrepreneurial dream happen. And so that's why a lot of businesses fail. It's why a lot of people give up. They call it quits because they can't take it. Now, the good news is if you go through that grind of, you know, putting in those long hours and doing what it takes to, you know, make all of this happen is that – the other side of that hill is a beautiful place to be where you do have freedom and you do have a good lifestyle. It's just that, again, so many people can't make it through in the beginning. And a lot of that has more to do with their mindset and their fear than it does their actual skill set.
I agree. You know how I liken it? If you're going to start your own business, whether it's part-time, whether it's out of your garage, whether you're working out of a bedroom or your basement, it doesn't matter what you're doing. I liken it in my own mind to going back to college or putting yourself through college. You're going to work your fanny off. You're going to be up at night going, oh, I can't do this. This is hard. I hate my instructor, most times me. When I first went back to college, I was pretty sure I was not going to make it for the first 3 weeks. I have never been so burnt out in my life. But after that third week kicked in, I went, oh, okay, I caught my balance. But I think if you look at it like, okay, I've got this long educational period, I've got to set up my systems, my processes, build a team, you know, get all of the foundation built. Once you get that taken care of, the rest of it is where you can be extremely creative and enjoy it.
Well, that's right. And I think here's the thing that people run into, and they don't think this, and I guess maybe this isn't taught enough, or people just maybe can't find the right information. But people go out and they start their own business, and they think, I'm an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. I do this. I got my website up. I got my business cards. You know, check this out. This is awesome. And then they think, now what? Like, where's the business coming, right? Because they don't stop and realize that they didn't learn how to be a marketer. They didn't learn how to sell. And if you know how to sell, you can do anything you want in life. You know, that's just, a fact. And so they don't develop that. It's kind of what Michael Gerber, you know, talks about in the E-Myth, that if you're a good cook, that doesn't mean you can own a chain of restaurants. You've got to know how to market and run and manage, you know, a million other things. And so that's what ends up happening, though, with a lot of people, again, especially during these kind of economic times where they jump into it, maybe with excitement, but also with a lot of anxiety because they're afraid, you know, because they did, you know, lose the 9-to-5 job. They lost the steady paycheck. And so now they're scared, you know, that this isn't going to work or that their spouse isn't going to support them and all of these things. And so as they're doing this, what happens is they're so consumed on that and they're so consumed on the details of whatever business idea it is that they're trying to implement that they don't stop and think, okay, wait a minute, how am I going to get anyone to buy this? Does anyone even want to buy this? You know, that's
good
actually
point.
The first question. And, you know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to sell it? Because that is a big, big factor in all of this. And I think I told you the story about Jason Elkins, a few moments ago. The reason that I knew he was going to succeed from day one is this guy knows how to sell. You know, not in a slick, pushy, you know, used car salesman kind of way. Mm-hmm. He's very genuine about building relationships with people. He thinks, how can I help someone first? Before he asks how they can help him, right? And so he had no problem transitioning. Like he had clients like days later from being laid off from his job because he just actually went out and continued to do what he was already doing. It's just this time it's, you know, on his own. And he was afraid. He just didn't let that stop him. And so that's the key ingredient. It's not like the entrepreneurs in the world out there that, you know, are super successful are doing it because they're so brave that, you know, they're unique and they're superheroes. No. They just acted despite being afraid. You know, I'm scared to death every day with what I'm doing. I just don't let that stop me.
Right.
And so I think we have to understand that being afraid doesn't make us weak, but it's also not an excuse to not keep pushing towards success.
No, and I think it actually sharpens our awareness. If you go ahead and you look at that fear and you examine it, a lot of times I find you can put it aside on a shelf because it's an irrational fear. But you have to take
right.
the time to examine it.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the things that people are afraid of are things that potentially may happen and not
right.
things that are actually happening to them.
So what if?
You know, my grandmother, and I love my grandmother dearly, but she is one of those people that, you know, you can have Christmas lunch with her and then she says, you know, This may be the last Christmas we're ever together. We may all die tomorrow. And it's like, well, yeah, you know what? We may. That potential is there. But that doesn't mean we need to focus on it, especially while we're having, you know, lunch on Christmas Day. But that's kind of her mindset. And so I think it comes back to, do you have a positive attitude or do you have a negative attitude? And I don't mean this like if you think everything's going to work out, it's magically going to work out. I mean a positive or negative attitude in that do you see things for every reason why it will work and why it can work, or do you immediately look at every reason why it won't? And that is a big difference between success. When I look at my clients who are doing, you know, seven, you know, figures a year, all of them, when whatever challenge comes their way, they start seeing, you know, well, here's why this idea is going to work. Here's how we're going to make it happen. Here's what we can do. Here's how we can adjust. Here's how we can adapt. And the people who are, you know, not at that level of success, it's because you give them an idea, you give them a strategy, and they follow it up with, yeah, but.
Right.
You know, here's why I can't do this, or here's why that may not work for me, as though they're somehow unique and special and no strategy under the sun, you know, applies to them. And that's not the case. So we have to stop and think, okay, if I'm afraid of something, is it just a negative attitude, or is there a real rational fear here? You know, if I'm standing on top of a skyscraper and I have the fear of falling, that's not me being negative. That's me being realistic that,
right,
you know, I shouldn't be up here. But if I'm sitting here and I'm about to launch a marketing campaign and I have this fear that it won't work and no one will buy what I'm selling, that's not really a fear. That's a negative attitude. And there's a big difference. And once you can start becoming aware of that, then you can continue to take action and move past it.
Well, and you said a key word, you have to take action, because if you're sitting there, excuse me, just examining the heck out of it and saying, oh, this isn't going to work and nobody loves me and I'm going to sit in a corner and eat worms, you won't pull the trigger. You're not going to take action.
Well, that's it, right. I mean, action is certainly, you know, the key to success. And I think that what someone, let's tie this into the kind of entrepreneurs we're talking about, who that they may be new. If you're listening to this and you're a new entrepreneur, or you're about to start your own business, or you've got an idea, it's not just taking action. You have got to be inspired to take action.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are not so fired up that you can't do anything but take action on that idea, then that idea is probably not for you. You know, I think that's the thing. When I hear people say, you know, oh, I'm starting this business, it's great, but then they procrastinate and they've got all these excuses of why they're not taking enough action, I think you're not inspired to do it. I literally, when the day ends and it's time for me to call my work day, you know, over, I'm mad because I'm ready to keep going. There's
me
other
too.
Things I can't wait to do. I look forward to waking up the next day and starting it again, so that I can get to work on, you know, some other things.
Right,
I'm inspired to take action. I'm not just taking action for the sake of I've read it in every business book that's ever been written. So that's the thing that you have to evaluate on your idea is, you know, wait a minute. You know, it may be a great idea, but that doesn't mean it's great for you. You know, what are you so inspired that the taking action part actually becomes easy to you and becomes a habit?
Right. And it really becomes part of the air you breathe. I mean, it really becomes you living that idea and the implementation of that idea.
That's right.
And if you're not, and look, I've been there. I mean, I've had some great ideas, but I don't do them because I've done exactly that. I've lagged along and, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then after a while, it's embarrassing to say I'm going to do it because I haven't done it. Yeah, and then I just quit talking about it. So, and then I go back and realize, I didn't want to do it in the first place. Great idea. Let me find somebody else who wants this. And I'll hand it off to somebody. If it's not for me, it's not for me. You know, it's just, you have to work on what you're really, really passionate about. But sales, let's go back to sales, because so many people, and I'm one of them, I never, ever wanted to be identified as a salesperson. Excuse me. In fact, I found it insulting when people would say, Denise, you're a natural salesperson. I mean, I would rear back and, you know, act like I'd smelled something foul. Hated it. But the truth is, I am, because when I'm talking about what I love and what I'm passionate about, I carry others along with me. And I think that's what true salesmanship is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I think most people probably don't want to consider themselves a salesman,
no.
Yet everyone on the planet is. You know, you had to sell your spouse on saying yes to you. You have to sell your kids on, you know, eating, you know, this food and not junk food. You have to sell you know, people on your ideas. You have to sell people on why they should follow you on, you know, social media networks or be on your email list. Or, you know, we are always selling something. You know, if I want to have pizza for dinner tonight, I have to start thinking of how I can convince my wife that this is a good idea, that this is the easier decision, right? And so, you know, we are selling all the time, and we don't even realize it. And so it's gotten a bad stigma, you know, to say, you know, that you need to be a strong salesman in these things, because I think people think of it in terms of you're going to manipulate people and you're going to be pushy to people and, you know, all of that. And that's not what strong salesmanship is to begin with. So, again, you know, there's been a bad labeling and a bad branding, actually, you know, with that term. But, like I said, the reality is we're all doing it already. And so you can either get good at it and get pretty much everything you want in life, or you can stay mediocre at it and continue to let things just happen to you, either good or bad. I would rather have more control over it, and I want to be able to get my way more times than not. And so we have to sell. The hidden area here, Denise, that people don't realize, by the way, because people don't ever talk about this, is that it's not enough to sell someone. You then have to keep yourself sold to them. Which is a whole other thing. So, you know, when my wife said, I do, you know, to marry me, I wasn't done. I have to keep myself sold to her so that she continues to say, I do, every day until we die. And so when you get a client, that doesn't mean you're done. You have to keep yourself sold to that client. Continue, you know, to work with them and, you know, add value and those things. So we don't think about this stuff. You know, we take it for granted. If someone follows you on Twitter, don't think you're done. You got to keep yourself sold. I unfollow people all the time because they did a poor job of keeping themselves sold. It's no longer interesting to follow them. Their information is no longer relevant to me. You know, there's a thousand reasons, you know, why that may be the case. But again, we don't even think about that because we don't think of ourselves in terms of, you know, that we are salesmen, that this is something that we have to do. And so it's a skill set that you have to learn. If I'm a brand new entrepreneur, I'm getting my hand on every single book about sales I could possibly get, and I'm devouring them. Because if I can sell, the other stuff falls into place. Good things happen when you're making money. You know, there's a lot of, you know, good things with business. And so, you know, and you and I have talked about this before, especially when we talked a lot about, you know, my book, of how people focus so much on their ability of, you know, this product is going to be great, this service is going to be great, and they forget that if no one knows that it exists, you're broke.
Right.
You know, if you don't know how to get it out there, you know, that's it. Can you imagine a world where, you know, Steve Jobs is just, you know, sitting alone, you know, in some home with this incredible-looking, you know, MacBook Pro computer,
right,
and no one knows that it exists?
And his turtle.
You know, how sad would that be, right? He was great at sales because they knew the marketing and things. So, you know, and I'm just, you know, throwing out examples, you know, for people, but it's a mindset that you have to develop first and foremost so that then you can seek out that skill set to get good at it. I do believe that anyone can learn how to sell. I think that, again, back to the attitude, you have to want to, you know, and you have to understand that, you know, promotion and selling and all the things, it's not, here's what I've got, here's what I can do, you know, do and all that. It's, here's what this will do for you.
Right.
You know, here's how I can help you. That's what it is. And when you explain that to people, by the way, selling becomes so much easier.
It really does.
Yeah.
You know,
so, I mean,
like Zig Ziglar said, you know, you just help enough other people, you know.
Well, that's exactly right. That's, you know, probably his most brilliant quote, which is saying something because he's got, you know, 300 brilliant quotes. But, you know, that's the thing, you know, Zig was such a great salesman because he got this, you know, that he can't just get up there and say, you know, here's some sales strategies. He first has to sell you on why you should listen to his strategies and then sell you on why he's the right person to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to sell you that you have to be a salesman, then he has to sell you that he's the right person to listen to, and then he has to sell you that his strategies work. He's done three things right there before we've ever even really gotten into it. You know, so that's what drives me crazy when people say, well, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, but I don't do sales. What?
Yeah.
You know, if you have a pulse, then you have sold something in your life at some point.
Watch children. We talked about this before. The best salespeople on the planet are children. I mean, it doesn't occur to them that they're not selling. They are selling from the minute they wake up.
Absolutely. And my son, Jack, is 4 years old, and he's already the greatest salesman on the planet, and I'm just totally screwed as he gets older because, you know, this kid, like, I've met my match. You know, I thought when I was a kid that I was good because I was the kid who, like, my mom would say, clean your room, and I'd be like, well, if you could clean it one more time and show me how it's done, in the future, I'll be able to do it better, right? And that worked for surprisingly a long time. But my son, like, you know, he tops that. He just has all these weapons, and he's learned, you know, what the weaknesses are, right? You know, the hot spots and stuff. And so you're exactly right. You know, kids are so great at this, and the kids, by the way, do this every single day. And I think the kids are so great at it because they're not thinking, I'm a salesman. They don't even care. They're just thinking, oh, I want this. What do I need to
get
say to get it? Yeah, you know, how do I make this work? And so, you know, some of those tactics are effective, some of them are not. But also notice how the kids test, right? They're so great at this. I wish entrepreneurs would be like, let me test what works. If I say this, does someone buy? If I say this, do they run away from it? You know, we don't test anything. We, you know, even people who do marketing, they know that the answer to great marketing is testing, yet they don't test anything. It amazes me that this stuff happens, but it occurs, you know, so much. And so it's, it's frustrating, but for those who grasp it and then are willing to learn it and apply it, they are the ones who rise to the top.
By that, you mean split testing?
Well, yeah, well, there's split testing, especially in terms of marketing, you know, the traditional, you know, A-B split test and that stuff. But you have to test everything. You know, I for example, Denise, I've actually never shared this with somebody, but I'll come on interviews like this, and I will share certain stories to see how people react, to see how it sounds out loud before I go on stage at an event and share that story. You know, I'm testing it. You know, stand-up comedians, professional comedians. I know Chris Rock does this all the time. They'll go out and perform at a few small clubs in front of, you know, 30 to 40 people, testing material before they go on HBO or Comedy Central for 60 minutes.
And that makes sense.
Absolutely. I will.
Because you have a very reduced. Well, you have a very condensed audience, and better to see what's going on there because it's like a small petri dish, so to speak.
Well, that's exactly right. I use this for content creation as well. I will often tweet something that's just sort of an idea in my head that could make a good blog post, and if people react to it and they engage with me on it and they retweet and share it, I know I've hit something. So I'll go back and write a full blog post about it. If you put it out there and no one cares, well, then I'm not going to spend my time writing that post because, you know, it sort of fell on, you know, deaf ears. So, again, there's so many easy ways to test, but we don't ever, like, really stop to think, okay, wait a minute, I'm going to test. And so if you don't test, then when something doesn't work, you don't know why. And you may have been really, really close. I had a client many years ago. When I say many years ago, I'm talking about 2003, 2004, you know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And they sent out 10,000 copies of a direct mail sales letter. And when they were calculating the results, they came to me and they said, this letter completely failed, and so we're doing away with it. I took a glance at the letter, and I loved it. So then I said, well, wait, let's take a look at, you know, the headline here. The headline was really weak. The rest of the letter was awesome. And so I said, let's just try it again with a different headline. And then guess what? Massive results. But they were going to quit. They were going to say that direct mail doesn't work because they didn't actually test what they were doing. So it's the same thing. People will, you know, they'll start their Twitter account and, you know, they'll tweet twice a week and then say this didn't work. And so they'll say that social media doesn't work.
Right. And I see that all the time. All the time.
Yeah, it happens daily.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, people will say, well, you know, I've been on Facebook, I've been on Twitter, and I'll go look. Yeah, you were, but it was 6 months ago. So what have you been doing for 6 months? They're like, well, I'm busy doing this and this. Okay, but your audience, such as it is, doesn't know what you're up to, so they have no reason to follow you. You're no longer a resource. You're not interesting to them. Hello. Yeah,
that's right. And the problem is that they lack patience. And I'm not a patient person either, so this is something I do have to work on. But I was actually talking to somebody this morning, and we were talking about connecting with influencers, and we were sort of joking about how, you know, you'll take like a Chris Brogan out there, you know, who's got one of the most popular, you know, marketing blogs and business blogs on the internet, and someone will tweet Chris to try to get his attention, right? They want to be connected to him, and maybe he won't have time to write them back, and so they'll say, well, that didn't work.
Oh.
And it's like, you know, there's no, where's the patience?
Yeah,
it takes a long time to build a genuine relationship with people. But again, you know, people are afraid of that. And so they end up, they ask for, you know, the sale, you know, too quick. And it's like, you know, you can't do that. You don't propose to the girl on the first date. You have to date them a while. You know, you have to build the relationship. And the same is true with our prospects and customers, connecting with influencers or anyone out there. You know, that's just the case. I'm going to say it's funny just because it makes me want to cry, and it sounds better to me if I say that it's funny. But as an author, the most perplexing thing that ever happens to you is when you go and speak at an event and an attendee comes up to you and they give you their book. It's a weird thing. I remember speaking at an event with a fellow author, and it was a book event for both of our books, and we were in the line signing books, and someone comes up and gives us their book, and we looked at each other and we were like, you know, what's happening right now? I had a guy come to me and give me a book on, you know, stopping smoking. I've never smoked in my life. you know, I appreciate what they're doing, but there's no relationship there, right?
No, and it's so tacky. It really is just tacky.
Well, it's one of those things, and I don't want to sound like, you know, oh, look at this author, you know, complaining about, you know, people coming and giving books. It's not that. Again, I appreciate it. But the problem is, with that approach, you can guarantee I'm not reading your book.
No kidding.
I won't be tweeting about it or writing on Facebook or, you know, buying copies, sharing it with friends or any of that, because the approach is wrong. There's no relationship. We just met, and you're immediately going for the sale. And so that's what I'm saying, that there's this huge lack of patience in the marketplace, and it's causing people then to go out of business, because they're not willing to be patient about building relationships with people. And it's a shame that this is happening. And, you know, there's some industries out there, there's certain products you can sell where you're not really building a big relationship with someone. You can just go straight to sell it. You know, if I'm trying to sell, you know, Windex to somebody, I don't need to spend 6 months building a relationship with them to then say, do you want to buy some, right? But for those of us who have a different type of product, or we sell a service, especially if we sell higher-end items, the relationship has to be there. It has to. I had someone ask me last week, and they said, John, you know, how do we get you to promote us?
Oh, boy.
And I said, well, the first thing is you don't ask that question. Because, you know, it's a genuine thing. You have to build relationships in a very authentic way. And you have to, again, be patient. And then here's the hard part. You have to be cool with the fact that you may spend a lot of effort trying to build a relationship with someone and they never help you out. You just have to. It's part of it. You may tweet Chris Brogan every single day for the next 2 years. That does not mean that he's sharing your blog post. You know.
Well, yeah,
it increases the chances. If you start building a relationship with them, that increases the chances. But you can't expect it. And again, that's the problem, is people are so eager to make that initial sale, you know, whatever it is that they're selling, that they lack patience, and then, you know, they become frustrated, and then they become bitter and broke and out of business.
And you see this on Facebook as well, John. I think it's probably more egregious on Facebook because it's just easier to work with, but just in the last couple of days, I manage several Facebook business pages for myself and for my clients. And the same group of people, they're coming along, and on every single page, they're saying, well, you know, I forgot to mention this the other day. They're not part of the group. They don't even like the page. But they're, you know, they're now posting a link to some kind of diet suppression.
Uh-huh.
I block them. You know, I block them and I boot them out. But, and I get what they're doing, and in a way I kind of admire their initiative, but I do want to smack them. It's just not how you do it.
No, you're exactly right. And so they're showing you right up front that they are taking zero time to establish trust. so that you can trust them. They're showing you right up front that they really don't care about you.
No,
they care about
not
just blasting their junk out, you know, to everybody and hoping that, you know, somebody, you know, makes a sale. And that's just such, hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a marketing strategy. Doing something in case it works or, you know, hoping that it works, you know, there's too much knowledge out there to be guessing these days. But that's the thing. And here's the secret to success, Denise, is that it's so obvious, no one sees it. That's the thing. When people will say, you know, well, what's that path to success that, you know, that really works? All of them do. That's why no one does it, because they want it to be magical, right? They want it to be special. They want it to be some kind of incredible discovery. Well, maybe if we're having this conversation, you know, 400 years ago, we could say something groundbreaking. But I got news for everybody. The, you know, Napoleon Hills and W. Clement Stones of the world and Augmentino and all these other, you know, legendary authors and the entrepreneurs that came before them, the Henry Fords, the John Rockefellers and all these people, they pretty much said it all. And
no kidding.
They learned
there
it
are
from
no
people
new ideas.
Who,
right.
Yeah, you know, and they learned it from people who had been doing it, you know, before them. And so the path is not hard to find, it's just hard to follow. And that's the problem, is that there's a million ways to become successful, and people have a hard time choosing which way I want to commit to.
Right. And I think a big important part of that whole equation is it's so important to find your own voice. I mean, you can take pretty much the same kind of curriculum or the same type of idea that, you know, one of your closest colleagues is working on, but it's your voice. You're going to have different audiences. And
yeah,
I think a lot of people
say,
oh, it's been done. Everything has been done. Do it your way.
Well, that's right. And at the same time, don't be intimidated that something has been done. That's good news. Whenever someone comes up to me and they say, I've got the most brilliant idea in the world and no one has ever done it, my first thought is there's probably a reason why.
And how are you going to spell it?
Yeah,
because
and the reason is that idea sucks. You know, that's probably why. If you think you've discovered something brand new, chances are you probably haven't, or someone tested it and it failed, and that's why you don't even know that it exists. So when we look at something and we say, but wait a minute, there's already people in this space doing what I want to do, wonderful. There's proof you can make money at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now what are you afraid of? You know, going back to Jason Elkins, who I was talking about earlier, you know, if he looked at it and said, you know, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of people doing the type of consulting that I want to do, well, great. You know, now you don't have to wonder, can I make a living at this? Because you're seeing other people do it.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, so that's the thing that, I'm not saying that there's not room for innovation. If you look at what Jeff Bezos has done with Amazon, you know, he knew people bought books, but he innovated the way we buy the books. You know, Netflix did not change DVDs. They innovated the way we get them. Redbox then turned around and innovated it again and changed the way we get them. The product is the same. The product is the same as what Blockbuster had and what Hollywood Video had and any other, you know, video, you know, rental companies that used to exist. So there is room for innovation. There is room for creativity. Finding your way, like you just said, what's the way you can make it work? And then you apply the principles of success to that. But like I said, certainly don't be intimidated that someone else out there is already doing it, because that just means that it works. When I started my real estate business, the only reason that I got into real estate was because I saw someone driving an amazing car, and then I went to their house, and their house was ridiculous, and so I thought, this is wonderful, and I want this. And by the way, they were so dumb that I thought, if this idiot can do it, I can do it. And so it was like the ultimate confidence boost that I needed.
Sorry, I'm going to be in the corner laughing for a while. Jeez. But, no, look, I've been there, done that. It's like, you know, and the whole virtual assistance thing for me, when I first started, it was a fairly unknown industry, and it still kind of is to some degree. But it never occurred to me, John, to say, oh, well, you know, this girl's doing it much better than I ever could, or this. I didn't even go look at their stuff. I did an initial pass through their websites and went, well, I'm already doing all that and more. And I never went back and looked, because I did not want to compare myself to them. I wanted it to be my voice, my authenticity, my skill sets. And I still operate that way. You know, I'll pass through, I'll get some great ideas, and then I go do what I want to do with them and what I think will suit my audience and my customers and my clients.
That's right. That's right. You find a way to make it work in your favor,
mm-hmm.
and that's when things really start to click.
Right. Absolutely. So you know what I really wanted to talk about, too, today? You're a celebrity right now. I mean, you are developing a lot of celebrity status in your brand and in your marketing. Any kind of suggestions for people who, and I know you don't want to start out that way. It's kind of silly to think you can start out that way, but let's assume that members of our audience are going, you know what? I have put in all the hard work. I'm ready to launch in a big way. Can you give them any advice?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, if you're talking in terms of like increasing your brand awareness and increasing
mm-hmm.
the amount of exposure that you've got out there, which means basically that you've grown your audience. More people now know you exist. More people are familiar with your work. Then, you know, you have to do something that is worth talking about. You can't just create the same kind of content and the same style that everyone else is. You've got to do something different there. But you also have to leverage the people who've already got the audience. And that's something that you certainly should do. People don't realize that I spent 4 or 5 years behind the scenes, not only building relationships with some key influencers in my industry, but also they were clients of mine, and I'm helping them build their business. And so a lot of people said that I came on the scene out of nowhere, just overnight, boom, here I was, which is hilarious because
it did look that way.
I've got far too many gray hairs and wrinkles for this to have been that easy and that overnight. So that's the thing is, if you don't have the audience, you've got to leverage the people that do. And you have to be willing to do the work that's necessary to get new people exposed to your work and to your brand. I do about 4 of these interviews per week. And I can tell you that a lot of my peers would say that that's way too many, and there's no reason to be doing that. And my thing is, I'm getting in front of audiences that I normally would not have been in front of.
Mm-hmm.
And so right before you and I started talking, I just finished an interview with a guy named Mark, and it was a great interview. And, now I'm on this one. And it's 2 different audiences, completely. And,
exactly.
and we talked about different things. But I am trying to, again, increase that awareness and do whatever is necessary to do that. And I think a lot of people aren't. They're so focused on, trying to build up their blog and their Twitter followers and all that, they don't think, wow, if I went out and started writing some guest blog posts for people who already have an audience, now my audience is built in.
Mm-hmm. You reach a completely different audience.
Now there's going to be this carryover. A good friend of mine from the UK, he lives in the US now, named Dean Hunt. Dean and I are close friends. We've partnered on many projects together. When he first got started, I think he spent, and I wish I knew the exact number, but probably 8 or 9 months doing guest blog posts for people before he ever even launched his own blog.
Oh.
And so when he launched his blog, there were people waiting for it. There were people paying attention to it. And so he had an audience. And of course, he's maintained that and stuff over the years. And now I don't think he ever does guest blog. Probably hasn't for several years. Hasn't had to. So that's just one example of, you can't just sit there and think, I'm going to keep posting great content to the same 200 people that are following me on Facebook.
Are you sure?
I am sure. You have got to get out in front of new people.
I better rework my strategy before my coaching call. Okay. But, you said something just a little bit ago that was very, very interesting. You said that, you were building these relationships with, influencers and people who, clearly just will promote you to the ends of the earth now. But you did that for several years. Was that a strategy or was it happenstance that became a strategy?
A little bit of both. A lot of the influencers in my world were clients of mine, have been clients of mine, and so many continue to be clients of mine. I was fine for a long time being the guy behind the scenes because I'm an entrepreneur at heart. This isn't the only thing I do. You know, I'm involved in other businesses and things like that as well. So I wasn't really looking to grow my own brand. And then what happened is a lot of those people were wanting to share stuff I had taught them, and they had no place to point people. And I started a blog because I was tired of them asking, basically. Once that happened, though, I quickly realized I really did have the same problem as everyone else. Not only did no one know who I was, no one cared. Right? So who am I? How do I leverage this? And so I have to be very, very specific about it. And I am strategic about it. You know, when I go to speak at an event, the first thing that I do is I look to see who the other people in the lineup are who are also speaking at the event, and who do I want to get to know. So, you know, and I'm going to ignore the people that I don't care to know. And so, I know that Mitch Matthews is a friend of yours. I think you've had him on the show before. Mitch and I were talking one time, and he said that he remembered he and I were speaking at an event together, and he remembers me going out to, like, the keynote speaker and talking, and how he was thinking, you know, wow, you know, I didn't realize they knew each other. And then when I came back from that conversation, he was like, how do you know this guy? And I was like, I don't. We just met. And, like, Mitch was, like, blown away by this, right? But it's because I knew before I even got on the plane to leave Nashville that I'm meeting that person and I'm going to build that relationship. Right. I'm going to start to lay that foundation. So, again, you know, it comes down to patience. Not everybody that you build relationships with then turn around and promote you.
Sometimes they shouldn't, because their audience is not your audience. Doesn't matter what kind of relationship you have with them. If they're promoting something of yours to an audience that doesn't give a darn, they lose credibility with their audience.
Well, that's exactly right. One of my closest friends never promotes me because he owns a business where no one in the world would care.
It
doesn't mean that he doesn't support me or any of that. And if he was talking to somebody that would care, he would certainly, you know, bring my name up and all of that. But that's just not the industry that he's in. And so you're exactly right. But that doesn't mean that there's not still, you know, advantages and other ways, you know, to leverage those relationships rather than just, you know, straight promotion. But I see so many people creating content, and I think, why aren't people sharing this? And then they hear people say, well, it's not, you know, share worthy, create remarkable content and all of that. Well, if you create remarkable content, you can write the best blog post in the world. But again, if you don't have an audience, still no one cares. And the influencers aren't sharing it unless you have a relationship with them, because no one's looking for you. And that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people. But no one's looking for you. No one wakes up and says, I'm going to go find some unknown person who writes amazing content today. They're not doing that work.
Where do you start, and why? I mean, really, there's millions of blogs out there. There's millions of websites out there. It's just too much. You have to set yourself apart somehow.
Well, that's right. And so you have to build relationships. You have to, you know, network. You have to, you know, sell yourself, obviously, in a networking situation. I'm talking, of course, about being genuine with it, not, you know, a sleazy way of networking, but you just have to know that the stuff takes time. I mean, it truly does. And again, I don't think most people have the patience for it. And that's unfortunate, because they're missing out.
Well, it is. And I think, and this is just my observation, but what I'm seeing kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the hour, where people are saying, oh my gosh, I need to become a virtual assistant right now. I need to replace this income right now. And they don't understand that they're building a business. They're building their own career. They are their own boss. And they have to set up those, you know, angel clients and, you know, people who will say, look, I love working with John or with Denise or with Darla or whoever it is. And say, you know, I love working with this person so much. I'm going to introduce them to people that I know in my circle of influence who need services like this. And that it does. It takes time. And I think so many people right now are in a bit of a state of panic. And they just don't have the time, or they're not going to take the time. And
well,
that's a huge mistake.
I think they're not going to take the time.
Well, I think
so, too. They say they don't have the time, but that's not true. There's no such thing as a time management problem. It's a priorities management problem.
It's
not that you can't manage your time, it's that you don't have your priorities set right.
That is brilliant.
That, becomes, you know, their problem. And in terms of relationship building, you can't rush it. My friend Scott Stratton, author of Unmarketing, great guy, has a wonderful quote where he says, if you believe that business is built on relationships, then make building them your business. You know, then make the focus, you know, about building relationships. And most people would agree that business is greatly built on relationships, yet those are the same people who then claim, I don't have time to build relationships. But then you're saying you don't have time to be successful. You're saying you don't care enough about people to get to know them.
Exactly, and I'm glad you went that further step, because that's exactly what I was hearing from you. You know, it's like, I want your money, but I don't want to have to mess with you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Not good.
It's no way. You may make some sales on that. You may make some short-term money, but long-term, you're not building anything that's going to actually last. You're not building an asset there. Right now, you could blow up my Twitter account, destroy Facebook, which I would actually probably be wonderful with, and, you know, delete my blog, take the book away, all of that kind of stuff, destroy my email list. I'm right back on top to where I am now within 30 days or less, because the relationships are still there.
Right. That's how it works. You know, I wish people would just take the time to educate themselves. Here's what it is for me, John. It's common sense. When you're on social media, when you're on Facebook or you're on Twitter or LinkedIn or Pinterest, the golden rule applies here as far as I'm concerned. Don't do anything to somebody online that you wouldn't do on their front porch. Like, if you're going to put a bunch of your junk on my Facebook page, you literally just walked into my yard, dug, two big old holes and stuck a billboard in my yard.
What do you think
I'm going to do to you? First of all, I'm going to shoot the billboard. And if you're not out of my way, I may shoot you too. So, you know,
that's
do that.
Exactly right. I mean, it's having a common sense approach.
Right.
Of just stop and think about, wait a minute, you know, is what you're doing affecting the brand? I've told this story before, and I apologize if you've heard it a dozen times, but the way we market ourselves matters. The way we sell matters. I had a church who my wife and I attended, and they kept coming over and knocking on the door, uninvited, nothing scheduled or any of that. And every time it was at night when we were about to have dinner and finally get the kids to bed and all that. And so it was an interruption. It was like, very unwelcome. And so I would explain to them that I don't like this, yet they kept coming and coming. And so eventually we stopped going to church there, and we found a new place. And by the way, the first thing we heard at the new place was, we're not going to come knock on your door. And I just wanted to jump up and be, amen, hallelujah, I'm sold, where do I sign? this is great, right?
But they heard the complaints from the community.
Well, yeah, that they do what you and I are talking about, common sense of, wait a minute, I don't know how I would like that if someone was doing it to me. And so, I like it when people are aggressive. I appreciate the effort. I appreciate the enthusiasm. I like that stuff. At the same time, you have to be smart about this stuff, and don't try to go for a short-term sale that then damages your long-term brand. Because, again, you're not building a business. You're not building something that you can rely on.
Well, not only that, but you run the very real risk of offending the person that you're trying to influence.
Oh, absolutely. And you don't get many second chances.
No.
So that's the thing. If you're trying to connect with someone and build a relationship, and, again, you're doing it in an authentic way and you're being, very genuine about it, but you then do something that turns them off, chances are they're done with you.
Yeah, and listen, in this day of social media, I mean, several years ago, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I mean, it's going so fast, but it didn't used to be that we really, really had to focus on being personable and interesting and a resource and funny and entertaining, whatever it is that you are, or a combination of all of them online. I mean, we could just put out our stuff and, hope that people bought it. Now we really have to show people who and what we are. We have to be kind and compassionate and engaging and sometimes entertaining. We have to absolutely be a resource. And I think a lot of people really don't get that. That's truly, for me at any rate, what social media is all about.
Well, that's exactly right. It has forced everyone to act like humans. and it exposes those who don't.
There you go. That's exactly right. So we are running out of time again. Will you please come back?
I certainly will.
Oh, good, good, good. You know, I always do this on the show, so you can't say, well, no, Denise, I didn't like being here. I'm not coming back. You see my method there?
It's a great method.
It works. Huh? Very quickly, do we have just a moment where you can go into the 20-60-20 rule?
I'll do the quickest version I know how.
We've got about 6 minutes.
Okay, the 20-60-20 rule is basically that as your brand grows, as your business gets more popular, you're going to have people hate you and hate your brand. Everyone has this, by the way. You can point to any celebrity, and, you know, Justin Bieber has a lot of people that love him, and then there's that many people that hate him as well. So 20% of people are going to love you, and they're going to love everything that you do. They're going to look forward to buying all your products and services and all those things. And in their mind, you can do no wrong. You can make a living off that 20%, so that's the good news. 60% doesn't even know who you are, or if they know who you are, they don't care. They haven't really made up their mind whether, you know, they like you or hate you, because, you know, every business faces obscurity, and that's where that 60%, you know, comes from. The last 20%, these are the people that hate you, and they're going to hate you for a variety of reasons. They're going to hate you because they don't like your personality, they don't like the way you look, they don't like that you're successful. There's a thousand different ways out there. So what happens is, and this is why that's an okay thing and actually a good thing, is that when the 20% who does not like you gets vocal about it, it ticks off the 20% who loves you. So, you know, if I go up to, you know, my niece who's, you know, I think 11 or 12, and I tell her that, you know, Twilight sucks, you know, she's, you know, attacking me,
right?
You know, because she's going to come to the defense. And so a good bonding experience happens with your 20% who love you when that occurs. Something really recently has happened that's a great example of this. The Grammys were you know, just recently happened, and the drummer for the band The Black Keys made a comment in an interview about basically the reason Justin Bieber hadn't gotten nominated for a Grammy was that he didn't deserve it. And of course, every Justin Bieber fan out there gets mad. And they blew up this guy's Twitter feed, like with death threats and everything, which is hilarious.
Oh,
you know,
no.
8-year-old girls, you know, threatening to kill, you know, the drummer of the Black Keys. And, of course, he, you know, took it in really good fun and just kind of poked fun back and all that. But, again, notice that Justin Bieber didn't have to do anything.
His fans came
to his defense. So, again, you know, a good thing happens in that kind of situation. And so that's what that rule is all about. And the good news is, as we grow the business and we're afraid of what people think, you have to remember this because you're not going to please everyone. Wonderful friend of mine named Robert D. Smith once said that, you know, if you go to Amazon and search the Bible, you'll see that it's got 1-star reviews. He's not writing another one. You know, he's not going to look at those 1-star reviews and be, oh, well, next time we'll do better. You know, if you're bashing, you know, the Bible, you know, first of all, probably going to hell. Second of all, you know, that just shows how negative some people are. They're going to attack anything. So, again, it's just one of those things where if that happens, you know, in that situation, whether you're religious or not, it's going to happen to anybody.
Right.
You know, it just is. And so that's the thing, you know, to again, just take into account. You know, for every person out there that, you know, loves Elvis or the Beatles, there's someone out there that hates them.
We all have opinions, don't we?
Well, we certainly do, unfortunately. So that's the thing to remember. Now, let me just say real quick, because I know we're running short on time, but there is a difference between someone just hating you because you're successful and honest criticism. Okay, so if a customer has a complaint, that's valid. And that should be addressed, you know, immediately. What I am talking about with the 20-60-20 rule is not customers who aren't satisfied. I'm talking about people that aren't even doing business with you who just simply don't like you. You know, that's what I'm talking about, because that does happen.
Wow. And I guess that does happen. I must live in an insulated little bubble, or I really don't care, because I never go try to find people who don't like me. I suspect I really don't care.
Well, and that's a good thing. And look, not every brain is going to be attacked, but, you know, I look at it like, you know, I mean, let's take Tony Robbins, for example. You know, a lot of people love Tony Robbins. I'm one of those people. And there's, of course, a lot of people that just can't stand him. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, again, you know, that's okay, too. The bigger you get, the more you're going to have, you know, those people hate you. But I don't want to scare people away, because even though I've gotten to that point where, you know, I probably have those people who just, you know, are disgusted by me, it's not like they're tweeting me every day. Right. You know, I don't even hear it every month, fortunately. You know, so it's just one of those things. But at some point, you know, something's going to happen. You're going to get that, you know, that criticism, and you can't let it bother you, because, again, you know, it's just not going to apply to everybody.
Exactly. And we are definitely out of time. I cannot believe we do this every time, and we zip right through. I don't get to ask you anything that I wanted to ask you, because conversation is just so fascinating. And I did not get you to tell people where to find you on the web at the top of the show.
Well, they can find me at johnmichaelmorgan.com.
Great. And you know what? You've mentioned Jason Elkins a couple of times. He will be on my show March 1st.
Oh, wonderful.
So thank you for introducing me. I can't wait to interview him as well. But I'm definitely wanting you to come back. I mean, I've got so many. I do have to ask you, though, is there another book in the works?
There is not, actually. I get asked all the time. The first book, first of all, is still doing actually better today than when it first came out. So I'm still wanting to get that message out to people. Mm-hmm. I know what book number two will be about. I know what strategies will be in book number two, but I am in no rush whatsoever to actually write it.
Yeah, but we're in a rush to read it, so no pressure.
Well, I know. I do get a lot of people ask me about it, but I put off even writing the first book for about 7 years, so I don't think there'll be that long between the next book. But no, I have no plans of writing it this year, although I do plan to start writing it this year.
Oh, well, you know, at least you'll have the title, right?
That's right.
Or a working title, anyway. So.
That's right.
Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being here. And the show will be available for download in about an hour. You can also find us in iTunes. Just type in my name, Denise Griffiths, or John's name, John Morgan or John Michael Morgan. And this is Denise Griffiths and John Morgan wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you, John.
Thank you.